I'm Carrie Adams, and you're listening to Carrie's Connoisseurs, coming to you from Solid Gold Podcasts. Here we talk to the movers and shakers, the drinkers, the dreamers, and all the people who make it happen in the liquor and luxury industries from around the world.
Hello, everybody. It's actually the 10th of July today, and I don't normally tell anybody that, but I'm feeling a bit guilty because I should have done this a long time ago. My guest is Michael Fridgeon, and we're chatting about the results of his Trophy Spirits show, having not even made the time to chat about the Trophy Wine show. So if we can, we'll squeeze both in. Michael, hi. Welcome to Carrie's Connoisseurs.
Carrie, hi. Very nice to join you. And great to be talking to you now in this kind of ether environment that we both find ourselves in.
Can I tell everybody? So Michael and I are of a kindred era, and he's much smarter than I when it comes to this technology. You all know that I'm really bad with this technology. It's awful. I navigate my way around it, and I can do it, but with massive lashings of help from all the kids that I surround myself with. So today we were doing a thing, because Michael's in his office, as you can see, much nicer. Well, mind you, my studio is fun. Your office is intellectual. I think it's your study. Hey, it's not your office.
It's my study today, yeah, the office.
And because we're sort of in two separate geographical locations, Riverside is the thing that pulls us together and sticks us together between microphones and keyboards and this. But sometimes you have to re-update your something in order to be allowed to do something else. And that's what happened to us. So Michael's been incredibly clever. I salute you. For somebody of our age, you've done remarkably well. You've won a trophy. You've won a gold for getting yourself back onto Google Chrome, into Riverside, navigating everything. I'm very proud of you, so thank you. Michael, the Trophy Spirits show, you went to a different sponsor by way of Investec for all kinds of good reasons. There's been lots of Botox in your bottom, not your own one, but in the Trophy Show's one, following the sponsorship from Investec. They've been great. And we all know about your wine trophy show. Not too many people get involved in the Spirits Trophy Show. Talk to me. How old is it?
So the Spirits Trophy Show dates back to 2019, and it really is a very interesting show from a number of reasons. The obvious one is that it's simply taken over the DNA of the Trophy Wine Show, which has been running since 2002. And it's tried, tested, and to the extent that you think that good judges working with a lineup of wines or spirits can do the best they can, it's proved itself as close to kind of bulletproof, fireproof as that kind of methodology can be. And I would stand on a soapbox and say it's completely impervious to criticism. It never is, nothing is. You're talking about products which, firstly, at one level are objects of performance art. Some bottles are better on some days than others. But when I look back over 20,000 different wines tasted and a few hundred gold medals and trophies ever issued, it's as smart as it can get within those parameters. We transferred that DNA to judging spirits, and we really were very grateful that the industry, not just the local industry, but much more importantly, the big international players.
Yeah, it's important.
It was a good place to come and play.
Mm.
I think in the early days, they thought it would be a fairly kind of in a bunker way of seeing whether we knew what we were doing. But the same rules apply. Every panel has one highly reputed international judge out of three, and those judges are super smart at, in a way, either acting as mentors to the other panelists or, as it turns out, especially in some of the classes where the local specialists just judge a hell of a lot more products than they ever do. So what we have after 6 years is a very coherent set of judging criteria. We have really smart judges. We have the international judges bringing insights which are not necessarily available to local judges, especially in categories like gin and brandy. And also in categories where we're not big players, aperitifs, bitters, things. And the net result is over 5 or 6 years, we've seen the emergence of the really top players in the really important classes, and it's consistent. And this is the really interesting thing with the brand message. Now, that's quite different from wine, as we both know. There are lots of fairly ordinary wines which sell themselves by cranking up the price. They know that for a lot of people, the idea that price is an indicator, a benchmarker for quality. And that enables consumers, in a way, to get guidance which is often wrong. So the 200 Rand bottle has to be worth more in quality terms than the 100 Rand bottle, and so on up the pyramid. We also know, you and I, who've spent our lifetimes in the business of assessing quality in wine, that there is a point at which that's it's a myth, actually. It's a complete misleading cul-de-sac.
Yeah, well, sometimes the curves meet. Sometimes X marks the spot, and sometimes they dive, and sometimes they skyrocket. It's how long the piece of string.
Spirits. The really interesting thing is the message from old Abraham Lincoln that you can't fool all the people all the time starts to apply. And so what we've seen over the years is that the big brands, the big local and the big international brands, percolate to the surface, especially obviously in brandy, where aging is not just about how many years it's been in the cask, but how well you've managed that élevage. The same is true of whiskey. You would expect the more expensive whiskies, especially in categories like blended categories, to, you know, justify their pricing. And in a weird way with gin, which has seen a huge amount of what would we call them, amateur interest, but also it's a much more craft category than all the others. You would think, well, the craft guys can come in, and they certainly price accordingly. And over the years, consistently, the really smart big brands who've got the buying power for the botanicals and have the experts who know exactly what to do. And then you bring in real gin experts from overseas, and they are like, they are just extraordinary.
Well, I was interested to speak to you about the gin category, because nobody more surprised than me, with a retailer hat on, at the popularity and the growth in popularity of gin and craft gin and or sort of flavored gins, really. I thought that it was going to be maybe a two-season wonder, maybe three, maybe five at most. But the gin sales trajectory continues on the up, and it's clearly, I'm trying to assess why it's managed to enjoy that success for as long as it has. Because I suppose if you think of it, gin, for purists like you or me maybe, I don't want my gin to taste like rooibos tea or marijuana. You know what? I don't. I want it to taste like juniper berries, and I sometimes don't even want to mix it with tonic because then it tastes like quinine. But a lot of people do like marijuana flavored gin or rooibos tea flavored gin. What is it? What is the appeal?
So I think there are a few things. Firstly, there has been a real attrition, especially post-COVID, amongst the craft gin distillers. The numbers of entries there, they fell dramatically. The real players came back. Yeah, they came back. And the interesting thing is that there were fewer of these really outlandish components.
Mm.
And those outlandish components are, as you rightly said, who wants gin that's a whiff of Cape Fynbos with a hint of rooibos wrapped up with marijuana in an enigma
and phyllo pastry? Yeah, we don't want that.
Yeah, it's all rubbish. So that's thinned down, and the best guys, the cleverest kind of botanicals and flavorants have come to the surface.
Okay, good. So I see that there were 26 gin entrants, which is way lower than I'm sure it has been, as you say, in the last couple of years. But it's still quite a lot.
43. It's still quite a lot, especially, which is the next point. Our kind of go-to guy for gin judging internationally is a super colorful fellow called David T. Smith. And maybe one day you want to put him on the program. Anyway, he is
super colorful.
He's straight out of the movies. He's written an infinite number of books on gin, and he travels the world judging gin, and he packs his bags after every iteration of the show with lots of South African gins, which he takes back. But the numbers obviously, in a sense, decrease because he's hit the good ones here.
Yeah.
But he finds, firstly, he's like a machine. He looks at a class, whether it's 25, 35, 40, and he narrows down the top players to 10 or 15 every time.
Yeah, you can see it. We know.
He lets the panel get there. But in the end, and especially with a guy like him chairing the panel, you see a solid bunch of the brands you would expect,
yeah.
A solid bunch of international brands, even if they are locally made.
Mm.
And then he finds those slightly outlandish gins that are not so off the wall.
Yes, of which we have quite a few in South Africa. And if we were
to... You have no idea.
If we were to choose, you and me, if we were given two each local gins, what would your two favorite local sort of left of center gins be?
So it was quite interesting. In those kind of pre-COVID days, there's a lot of very clever stuff coming out of genologists, particularly
yes.
Gin.
Yes.
This time round, two golds, neither of which in the end landed up with trophy, two golds out of three entries came from Inverosh. That's really
good.
Interesting. Because we know Inverosh
is a
really solid specialist, knows what it's doing, producer, and it's there. Two of their three entries.
But it's also got lots of money behind it now. As you say, it's one comes belongs to one of the big players. And I do think that I might put my neck out a bit and say that I think the distillation process has quite a lot to do with the end result as well.
It's everything.
Because
so that's where
it's
the,
just,
original,
it's the
original
craft.
Owners are still doing the production.
It's the craft
so
of making it, yeah.
A company can brand it. But if you ain't making it right,
that distillation is everything. And the next thing that we need to acknowledge, which we won't rub in too much because they might think that we're getting old and grumpy, but with good spirits, you can never really swerve too far from the quality of distillation, the quality of base product, and the ageability of it. So age brings beauty for me to spirits. Did it manifest as such?
Less in gin, certainly in the world of brown spirits. There's a fabulous Instagram X thing. You can pick it up on the Trophy Spirit Show website where Andy Watt talks about what goes into making smart whiskey.
And he should know.
He says you can mess it up at fermentation because you're not managing the right raw materials or the right raw materials aren't there in the primary phase. And then you can have the best possible fermentation and still absolutely kill it at the distillation phase because you can't manage distillation. Gin, in that sense, is really interesting. And a lot of people don't understand the difference between London dry, distilled gin, flavored gin. London dry, you are allowed no fixes after the distillation. If you don't get your botanicals right, your flavor
You missed the bus.
In a distilled gin, you can fix it, and in a flavored gin, you can add flavor and color. A London gin has to be white because it came out of the still that way.
Which is why we like London gin, because we're not playing. It is the epitome of skill and excellence. We like London dry gin. All the others, and we salute all the others because they have, you know what, there's never such a thing as bad advertising. We've also come to learn that. So all the hype around flavored gins and colored gins and distilled gins and all the rest of it, it's been good for the category. But on balance, do we agree that London Dry is really the king of the castle?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think so. So keep talking to me. Whiskies are massively growing category in Africa and South Africa largely. And you had a lot of whiskies entered. And should we start World War III? The trophy went to an Irish one. You know, that age-old fight between the Scots and the Irish.
No. The trophy for the very best whiskey was a tie between, just pay attention here, a tie for the first time in the history of the show, between the Baines Cape Mountain, which is a single grain double matured, and the Tomaten 2012 from a single cask. So the best whiskey of show was an absolute tie with two extremes, grain on the one side, malt on the other. And the pot still was Irish, Irish pot still whiskey. So no, in a sense, every single box was ticked. The best blended whiskey was a Johnnie Walker Gold Label Reserve, which is pretty smart whiskey. You can't be producing those volumes, selling them at those prices if you don't know what you're doing.
No.
Or can you be making Irish whiskey at quality in the pot still class if you're not doing what Redbreast is doing? And then if you look at that, I don't think there's anybody making better grain whiskey in the world today than Andy Watts. He's not there, and I think it is a madness on the part of the new owners of that business. Begged and grovelled and brought Andy back to Baines because he is a master distiller, and you can go and go to Neil Patterson at Whiskey Brother. He's brought in a single cask of 29-year-old Port Dundas, to a really smart grain whiskey, and you put that Bane next door to it. It's a fabulous whiskey at a fraction of the price. But if you're going for a unique single cask special selection, that Tomaten 2012, which is streets better than the 2010, which was in the market a few years ago.
I haven't tasted the 2012, I have to say.
2012 is, as they said of, I think, Clos Vougeot, should be drunk on your knees with your head uncovered.
No, I haven't tasted the 2012 Tomaten, but I do like Tomaten. So is it available in South Africa? Dare we ask?
Everything that's here is available in South Africa till it gets sold out. It is a requirement of the show that people don't use our judging talent, which I have to say costs us a lot of money, just to get an endorsement. It has to be available for South African consumers. It was a guideline from Investec, and it's always been a guideline.
Which is good. It's good. Michael, before we finish on the gin, I did see that the trophy for the best gin of show, Riedel Trophy for best gin of show, was the Amarula Premium Gin. That's nice, African gin. What are the botanicals in there? Marula berries.
So let me just tell you, which is really interesting, and this is especially if the program is going to be to pay attention to business. So in the deal in which Heineken bought Distell.
Mm.
Distell owned the franchise licensing rights to Gordon's, which I think is comfortably that kind of worldwide, absolutely real gin. And this sounds like an insult, but I don't mean it to be. It's like Coca-Cola in the sense that the guys who never go into the botanicals of Gordon's, even under license to Distell, they were the guys who put together the final botanicals. So Distell made it under license, and the Diageo guys who owned the brand controlled what went into Gordon's.
Yeah,
locally.
And that's been forever. I mean, ever since I was in the liquor industry in South Africa, Distell have owned that license.
So finally, there was a big negotiation after the Heineken deal, and Diageo bought the rights back to Gordon's gin and brought it into the Diageo fold, which is cool. It's their brand. They're now present in this market, and they are making and responsible for their own gin, which will continue to be the same. And in fact, picked up, as it does almost every year, a gold medal. It's a fabulous gin.
Yeah, it's fantastic gin.
The guys, ex-Distell, now Heineken, look at it and think, but we've been making this gin for years. We know how to make gin. So they launch, it's in a sense a completely new gin, and they've been running it for a couple of years, essentially for export markets and for duty-free. And their big brand in international terms is Amarula. So whether you think it's a good idea or not, they slap the Amarula label onto their new gin, and it has sold out everywhere in duty-free, etc. They trickle it into the market, they put it into the tasting, and it emerges as best gin of show. That tells you this is not an amateur job. This is not people decided
proper
to
stuff.
Use a trendy name. They've been doing it for years and years and years, and they're keeping on doing it perfectly well.
Okay, well, that's good. So we've got Gordon's gin or a similar facsimile thereof.
We've got Gordon's with a gold, Amarula with a trophy, and a really nice flavoured gin, Cape Fynbos, winning the best flavoured gin of class.
It is nice. I don't know if you had, what's that little Clementine gin? What's a Clem Gold.
Clem Gold.
I love Clem. That's my favorite sort of flavoury type
very,
gin
very
in South
nice
Africa.
Gin. I'm never going to tell you. And actually, it's not my job to know what just entered. It's my job to know what did well.
It's one of our favorite gins. I love Clement Gold. The Clement next
Gold.
Thing
it's
I wanted
lovely.
To is gorgeous. Yeah. The next thing I wanted to speak to you about is Absolut Elix. In a world of vodka, are we just being nasty to Vlad? Because everybody is horrible to Vladimir except me, but surely the Russian vodkas should have come to the fore.
Do you know what goes into Absolut Elix? It's a real question. I've actually done my homework on this one.
Tell me.
For a wine man, let me tell you, Absolut Elix is the closest thing you're ever going to get to perfectly made estate vodka. The
yeah, I believe so.
That vodka is harvested from the same sites every year. It goes to the same distillery. And here's the really interesting thing. The entire distillery, all the pipes, all the stills, all the connectors are only copper. So they're using pure copper in that distillery.
Yeah.
And it only exists to make Absolut Elix.
So it's basically an estate vodka, so to speak.
It's an estate vodka.
Yeah.
It is grain single site. The master distiller from the crush of the fruit, in other words, everything from the fermentation to the distillation is controlled in a single site. It is an extraordinary exercise in purity. And I did a vodka masterclass, I guess, 7 or 8 years ago, where the nuances of something which shouldn't have flavor if it's to be pure. The nature of vodka is purity. So how can you rate purity A above B above C? I promise you the stuff that comes out of that pure copper still
is beautiful.
Most extraordinary refined product. Nothing.
Do you know what it also is? A lot of it is the mouthfeel for me. It's that viscosity of that vodka together with the purity of the viscosity. It's like silk, satin going down your throat, isn't it?
Exactly, silk. And it is It's an aroma without a smell. It's the most
It's amazing. Yeah. I thought about that viscosity and that wanting of that feel in my mouth. I don't know if you ever remember, I think we spoke about it recently, when I first came back to South Africa and I met you at Anglo, you gave me a book. You gave me that perfume book to read. Do you remember perfume?
Fabulous.
It was the most alarming book. What was his name?
Fabulous book, yeah.
And I read it and it was
Patrick somebody.
With a G. It's with a G, yeah. I think. Well, it'll come to us. We got Alzheimer's light, but it'll come. It was the most extraordinary book, and it has honestly haunted me, that book, because his obsession with the perfect aromas and mouthfeels and tastes and what have you was just so, it seems normal to a normal wine-loving person, to a normal...
It does. Patrick Susskind.
Susskind, that's right. That kind of a gene.
This dates to the 80s or 90s, and the idea that at a completely subliminal level,
yeah,
you can be influenced by perfume to believe that people are good or bad.
100%. And if you extend it from just perfume to... texture, and as you get older, texture is just so important.
Very important.
In the art and craft of alcohol. And that perfect vodka. Are we keeping you up, Mark Lee? Did you have a young lover last night or what? Did Janice know?
Let me just help you to know that my wife is significantly younger than me. I always have a younger.
Sure, well, that sort of stopped me farting in church, didn't it?
Exactly.
Michael, so Absolute Elix Vodka has ticked the box for that. Johnny Walker, I'm sure that Investec must be incredibly pleased with the Johnny Walker result, Johnny Walker Gold. But to be fair, I've always loved Johnny Walker Gold. I've always thought it was a better drink overall than a Johnny Walker Blue. And you pay less for it. It's a delicious, molten, toffeed, golden, creamy, blended malt.
Yeah. Let me just say that...
In fact, the gold is a blended malt. Or is it a pure... No, the green was a pure
blended
malt.
Blended whiskey, yeah. No, it's the green, I think, to that. But let me just say that Investec is meticulous about having no view on this. They do... correctly as a sponsor, they believe in what we do and they live with the consequence. And they have been, as I say, meticulous in not commenting or criticizing. They are obviously very happy with the results. And all of the winners, both from the Trophy Spirit and the Trophy Wine Show, gold, silver medals and trophies, go through to their particular divisions where they host an extraordinary number of masterclasses, public events, etc., where they take these products and engage with consumers. And it's a really interesting thing that the sale of Trophy Wine Show wines is the biggest single sale through the designated retailer Port to Port. It's the biggest single sale of award-winning wine, outselling the combined sales of all the other competitions, ratings, rankings, from Tim Atkin to the Platter Guide to whatever, combined, which tells you that they really do have an audience that cares and that people obviously trust the results of the judging.
How long has Port to Port been the retailer there?
It's a really good question, but at least 5 years.
Long enough to gauge, yeah.
Yeah, long enough to gauge. It's really solid. It's lots and lots of wine gets sold, and a high percentage of it goes, we know, in special selections to Investec clients who obviously like or trust what the judges come up with.
Good. Talk to me about tequila. Having just come back from Mexico, I have to talk about tequila. I don't like tequila, but when you get good tequila, you could honestly leave home for it, couldn't you?
Absolutely. I many years ago landed up with a friend who'd done a lot of work in Mexico, and as a thank you from some of the people he had been working with, he was given seriously aged tequilas, and he said to me, "I'll give you a clue. It's not cognac, but what is it?"
And no, it tastes like cognac or whiskey.
It gets a wonderfully integrated, massively complex style. Truly properly made, properly aged tequila is a very special spirit. I think that it's a trendy spirit. We know that. We know that lots of kind of international celebs like to own a tequila brand. And most tequila is consumed in a way in which the appreciation of what's in the bottle
completely destroyed.
Front of mind. But having said that, that's not how the judges are judging. We don't line up the glasses. With the
you didn't line you up on the bar top. You didn't line the bar top, Michael, did you?
They do it properly, and it's really interesting because I go in and I look. I don't pretend to understand those classes. I'm very happy to hover. And I hovered around that, and it really is quite clear that when you get to the really smart stuff, we've had single-site tequilas winning the gold in the past. You really do taste the kind of intrinsic quality that comes from a commitment all the way from the farming to the bottom.
Yeah. No, it's gorgeous. So we've got Avión. I cannot say that I've tasted Avión. Have you?
Well, I have, just because I tasted it blind, remember?
I didn't know you were on the panel. You said you didn't volunteer to lie on the bar.
No, we didn't lie on the bar, but the guys who did the white spirit panel did that. They were, I have to say, there was one guy there who was a real tequila expert, which I must tell you, if I had been his father, I would have been embarrassed. But he was a machine when it comes to tequila. And when you look at the selection, it's really well done. It really is well done, no question about it.
Yeah. So anybody who's looking for the best tequila that's available for you in South Africa, Avión Reposado sounds good to me. My favorite tequila available in South Africa is Fortaleza. I love Fortaleza tequila. It's the only one I drink. Then if we go a little bit further down, to something that is very close to my heart is cognac, and I see my favorite cognac is their Frappin Grand Champagne. It's the most beautiful cognac that I've ever, and it should have been an Investec Trophy winner overall for the best liquor on the show. It's beautiful.
You know, I have a good axe to grind there, but let me tell you that Martell XO is a delicious cognac.
Good?
It's really,
really
good. And it's quite interesting when you taste are properly aged brandies. So you look at that Van Rijn's 20-year-old, which finished as best brandy of show.
Yeah, which is fabulous, I have to say.
It's not helped with oak. They are absolutely pure about the spirit, and it's made the way we respect winemaking, where the oak is part of the process, not the kind of overarching
foundation of it,
And generally, cognac, the oak is more obvious. It's certainly a richness and an opulence on the Martell, which is delicious. I think the Frappin 1270 has a purity, as does the Bisky, which was a really nice. The Bisky VSOP has a lovely linearity to it. So it's about style. Do we like oak? If we like oak, go for the oaked cognac. If you want real intensity of the distiller's art, the 20-year-old Van Rijn's is a really, really very fine brandy.
Yeah. And let's not forget that we've got here that won a gold medal, and I'm always so pleased to see these kind of things. The Richelieu Vintage Brandy 10-year-old. I mean, that is just one of the foundations of South African drinking culture. Richelieu is not necessarily the 10-year-old, but Richelieu is just one of the biggest brandy brands in the country, isn't it?
And it tells us that the guys who know how to make the big volume brands like Richelieu know that they can extract a few of the best barrels just for the showcase of the 10-year-old.
Was it delicious? I haven't tasted it for ages. It must have been
delicious.
Gorgeous.
I tasted it, in fact, again the other day. I don't want to do one of these stories, man walks into bar, but it is true. And I thought, there it is. I should actually test my panel and have a look-see. But I do want to go back to the Von Rhines and say it just about bagged everything. Trophy for the best pot distilled brandy.
Smart stuff.
Trophy for the best premium spirit. Investec trophy for best brandy of show. We don't have to take a step back to the cognacs and French brandies the way you and I were brought up to We need to acknowledge that at that level, in other words, not the kind of Spook and Diesel world, we make fabulous brandy in this country.
We make fabulous brandy in this country. Who is making Von Rhines brandy at the moment? Who's the brandy maker?
That's a really good question.
I don't know.
Don't know because of the changeover, but the head of spirit excellence at Distell is Marie-Lou Prinsloo, and she really is smart when it comes to quality and quality control. So who may be distilling it, I don't know, but nothing passes, you know, her eagle eye and gets ticked if she's not good.
Well, like I keep saying to everybody who's swinging from the rooftops about the wines, the Chenin Blancs from the Swartland. I mean, they were planted to make brandy. That's why we make such beautiful brandy. That's where they all came from. The KWV and Distell and everybody. They used those Chenin Blanc vineyards, didn't they?
Exactly.
It's very smart, very smart fruit. So we know that that's going to make us really nice stuff. If I were to say to you, we know that the show was a success. There is a website where everybody can go on and have a look so that they can see. And you're saying that if they want to buy, they can pop onto Port to Port.
Good question. I'm not sure whether Port to Port's carrying the full spirits range, but I do
I'm
know
sure
that
they are, because Port to Port is sort of Norman Goodfellas now. So, So I'm sure that they will do. We'll
but
pop that all on our
Trophy Spirit Show. And a separate website, Trophy Wine Show, and that will give everyone the results. And certainly the wines are port to port if they still have stock, and that's a really big if. And Trophy Spirit Show, either port to port or Norman Goodfellows. And a lot of these products, because they are spirits and they are big brands, are generally available, except for the small batch numbers like the Tomatin 2012.
Yes. They are. So now, if I were to say to you, you're allowed to run away with one bottle from your trophy show, what would it be?
You know, it's like that trick, what's my
favorite? No, just do it. Just say it. Stop being a sissy.
The one who said to me, you're going to be executed in the morning. What are you going to drink the night before?
No, your death row meal. We know that. This is your last
This is my last meal.
This is your thievery.
And everything else?
It's Desert Island. You've got monkeypox. You know your hours are numbered. You have got one last drink
I'm
from the 2020.
Tomatin because it's delicious and it may cure the monkeypox.
And if it doesn't, you won't care anyway.
I'm a more of a brown spirits drinker than a white spirits drinker. That's true. And I need to eke it out. And I need to make sure that the alcohol works at its best. And I love the personality of that. In other words,
is it quiet or is it noisy?
No, it is. You are fooled into thinking it's quiet. But it's quiet in the same way as when it's got you in a dark corner, it's a good time for you to keep quiet.
And enjoy it. Michael, before you go, you're not allowed to go yet. There was a big, I was remiss, I was away, you were away, whatever, and we didn't unpack the wine trophy results, which maybe we should at some stage. even though they're late. I know you've done your tastings and we all know what happened, and it was successful, and the show always is. But I was very, very heartened to see that somewhere in the lineup of trophies came Niederberg's Shiraz. I don't even know what vintage it was. I mean, I honestly don't know.
2022, it's an extraordinary thing. It was best red wine of show, discovery of show, which means the ratio of price to score, best ever. 98 points, about 100 rand a bottle. A word of caution for your listeners. They need to go to the website and look at the certification code for the batch that won that. So they produce about 400,000 liters of that wine every year, but only 10% of that was bottled in the batch that won the trophy. Now, it may all be identical, but that, as it turns out, was bottled at the end of 2023, so it's had time in bottle. There are very specific seal codes, and if they go to the website, see the seal code, and require or order the wine, which is the Niederberg Wine
Master. See if you can get that,
For 100 rand a bottle, they are getting Venice value like nothing else in the whole wide world.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I really was pleased to see that, and clearly again from a panel of seasoned judges. And you know, we've always said it, easy to make small amounts of fabulous stuff. Not so easy to make huge amounts of fabulous stuff. And I don't think that wine is even 100 rand a bottle. I think that last look, it was about 78 rand a bottle. It's incredibly inexpensive.
No, nothing on earth can be that. The glass costs more. I just want to also
promise
say,
you know, the
best Chardonnay and the best white wine of show was at comfortably four, maybe five times the price. It was the Delegraaf Estate Bunhoek Chardonnay, same vintage, 2022. Mm-hmm. And that wine went on to win Best in Show at the Decanter Awards in London.
Well, I'm very pleased to hear it.
It really tells you that the panels here were not, you know, in cloud cuckoo land. And the infinitely more expensive Delair, which admittedly is a year younger and at this stage is showing more oak than fruit, scored less than the less expensive, unbelievably delicious Bunhoek Chardonnay.
So I'm so pleased to hear it, because that Bunhoek Chardonnay, together with that, what's his red one called from the
Bunhoek Reserve, I think they call it.
It's not Bunhoek. It's also with a B, but it's. I've got a COVID brain, you know, where I can remember the first
Portmuskoff.
That's it. Those two wines I cited about 5 years ago, 6 years ago, as my two top South African wines. They were things to watch. They were just beautifully crafted. The whole farm has been beautifully put together. It's quiet. It practices a gorgeous modesty for what it is. And the wine is classy. And I'm so pleased to see that they're starting to blossom and bloom like that, because we all knew that they would. The Niederberg Shiraz, and that Niederberg Shiraz is the ordinary Cellar Master's label, or what is it? Is it just the ordinary
Wine Master's
label?
The Wine Master's, and I do want to give it a mention, because we don't understand the treasure we have in this country. The Niederberg Wine Master's Noble Late Harvest.
Oh my God, don't even start me on that.
You know, people go out and they spend 40 times the price on a half bottle of Ikem. It is fabulous, fabulous, perfectly made Noble Late Harvest Botrytis Chenin Blanc. Delicious.
So that was Niederberg Noble Late Harvest. Has it got a vintage?
2023, the Wine Master's vintage.
The Wine Master's.
Really good one. Yeah.
So you don't have to wait for the Niederberg auction to buy it.
No.
Because remember, at one stage you
auction, everything that used to go into those auction wines is sitting there at probably $150 a bottle.
Shouldn't everybody? I am swinging from rafters telling everybody about Noble Late Harvests. I've done it my whole life. I know that it was deeply unpopular and unsexy to drink sticky wine, but I love sticky wine. And we, like brandy, we make fantastic sticky wine in South Africa. We really, really, really do. So did that win itself an award, the Noble Late?
Yeah, best dessert wine overall. Fabulous wine. Really, really nice.
It's the perfect weather, guys. If you haven't got some, go out today or tomorrow. I'm sure it's available in Pick and Pay and Checkers and everywhere. Macro. Everybody will have that Niederberg Late Harvest.
Absolutely.
Noble Late Harvest.
It goes over rocks of ice, and it's just quietly lovely in front of the fireside.
It's completely delicious. So you've got one thing from the wine show that you're allowed to take with you to the island as well. So we're taking Tomatin and what else?
Taking Tomatin, and then I have to choose the red. Not necessarily a red. I will take...
It can be anything you like. It's your show, your circus, your monkeys.
So you know what I might take, oddly enough? Though I love that Shiraz, I think I might take the Zevenwachtsee. Very lovely Bordeaux blend. I think it's 2 years in a row that it's come in right at the top of its class with at least a gold.
I haven't tasted that for ages.
And I think you need to see what's happening at Zevenwacht. 2 years in a row up there with, you know, the top five producers in the country. Pay a bit of attention. Take it to your desert island.
There you have it, guys. So you've got Tomatin. We're going to do some Absolute Elix vodka for me because I like stuff that slides like satin, silky, silky.
Why not? Your desert island's got a good fridge somewhere.
We're doing Zevenwacht. What gin are we taking? Are we taking Gordon's?
I'm going to take the Amarula. I have to say, I saw it on the bench when the guys were finished. It's a beautiful gin.
Listen. Take it. I could also drop my knickers on Park Station and become one of those girls, and we could take a case of Amarula cream with us. Because Amarula cream, I don't care what anybody says.
It wasn't the best.
It's gorgeous.
It wasn't the best dessert wine, the best cream liqueur.
No, it wasn't. I saw the something wild, the African Wild was, I think, something.
Yeah,
but
African Wild was the...
But that Amarula cream, Michael, the other night some people came to my house for dinner, and I know that she loves Amarula cream, so I went and bought a liter bottle. I did feel a bit like Mrs. Hutzville, you know, walking out of the liquor store with a liter bottle of Amarula cream. Anyway, I did, and I've put it in the fridge, and we had some malva pudding or something for dinner. For dessert, and we opened this. There were six of us. That Amarula cream was finished by 10:30.
As
we drank
I would
a liter.
So
we drank a liter. It's delicious.
Cafe Latte cream liqueur won the trophy this year. The Amarula certainly got a silver. It's won a gold before. It is one of
delicious.
Our most profoundly successful liquor exports. The quality control is extraordinary. You know, I've done quite a lot of work on what it takes to ensure that cream liqueurs
doesn't curdle and stuff.
Don't curdle. Let me tell you that Amarula is a world-class product.
That's gorgeous. Do they make it out of condensed milk? Just be honest with me. Just be straight up.
No,
is there condensed milk in there?
The production, no condensed milk. Thank you. Nice try. Really. Been down
it
that
is condensed milk, Michael.
100 kilometers, no condensed milk.
It tastes like straight condensed milk and toffee, don't you think?
What I can't tell you I can taste, even though they assure me it's there, is the presence of any Amarula, but it's a clever game.
There's no Amarula in there. It's all condensed milk and toffee. Toffelux and condensed milk, but it is delicious and we love it. And we love you and we love your trophy show. All these things. I'm going to get one of these clever children to put it all up on a site somewhere that's going to lead everybody to go and find what we've been talking about. It's fun always. Thank you for making time, my darling Em. Thank you for changing computers.
I'm very happy to be playing on Chrome on this computer at this moment in time.
See, it's working like a dream. And as soon as we all come out of winter hibernation, we'll test a few bottles.
We'll have a party.
Love you lots. Thank you, Michael.
All the best.
Bye.
Love to see you. Cheers. Bye.